You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are back with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. So go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. Pepsi, made for football watching. And we are back here on Taco Tuesday. Kevin Ostreicher here with you. And back with us today to digest everything from that Ravens 28-24 loss in Week 8 to the Pittsburgh Steelers and more is Spencer Schultz from Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, it's been a rough 24, 48, 36 hours for Baltimore. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It was an exciting game. It was a fun game. It was a game that is reminiscent of some battles between the Ravens and Steelers that haven't felt the same in quite some time, probably dating back to about 2014, maybe, where, you know, both teams are at full strength and top kind of contenders and very well respected around the league for what they're able to do on the football field and doing battle. And it was a rough game. You know, the Steelers had a sloppy, ugly first half, although the Ravens gifted them a pick. Lamar Jackson gifted the Ravens or the Steelers a pick six, and the Ravens kind of controlled the rest of the first half. Other than that, scoring 17 unanswered. And then in the second half, you know, things really broke down for the Ravens defense. Steelers went no huddle to back up the Ravens DBs. And, you know, that penalties, injuries, fights, late hits, like it was a classic throwback Ravens Steelers heavyweight contender fight with big hits and all the good stuff. And while it's easy to, you know, from a fan's point of view, kind of be upset if your team loses. I get that. I can't blame you for it and the scrutiny and all that good stuff that happens every time they lose. But at the same time, it's exciting that this rivalry feels renewed. It feels like it's never going to die. The fire's never going to dwindle out. And, you know, you really can't talk Baltimore Ravens football from a franchise standpoint. And you can't tell the story of the Baltimore Ravens without mentioning the Pittsburgh Steelers early and often. And the Ravens are now kind of embedded into the Steelers' DNA since the Ravens' inception back in 96. So it was fun from that standpoint. The Ravens are a team that is, you know, still fighting to play clean football for four quarters and put it all together. And the Steelers were able to kind of come back there and take the Ravens down. So it's exciting because I am very confident in the rebound matchup on Thanksgiving. And the Steelers ruined a couple holidays for the Baltimore Ravens, some Christmas and New Year's and, you know, all that good stuff. So the Ravens are going to return the favor, and I firmly believe that. I've kind of been on that train for quite some time, and I'm excited. It's going to be a fun Ravens-Steelers November to look back on. And I think this is one of those losses where, aside from Ronnie Stanley going down, it's all going to be good stuff. It's all positive things, good takeaways, and good will come from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully that revenge game will be coming for Baltimore during the Thanksgiving matchup between the two teams. But yeah, I mean, this is a game, Spencer, you kind of mentioned it before we started recording, where Baltimore was in a position to win this game somehow. They shouldn't have been for the most part, but at the same time, they should have been in a position to win the game because of the turnovers and the penalties that happened. If those don't happen, Baltimore probably wins this game by 2-3 possessions. And let's start with the man responsible for those turnovers, Spencer, and that is Lamar Jackson. Now, in my opinion, Lamar Jackson has been somebody who has won the Ravens plenty of games, but in this particular instance, I think he's the one who lost this game for Baltimore. The two interceptions, very costly ones, the forced fumble, which, you know, wasn't directly his fault. He made a play and just ultimately didn't get the ball out in time. What did you see from Lamar Jackson in this game?
I saw Lamar Jackson. He plays at a different speed. You know, the pick six, the all 22 comes out, and you can kind of see that the concept was to put one of those Steelers linebackers as the force defender, have two mirrored routes there at the sticks, and see which one would get covered and throw it to the other one. And Lamar is moving too quickly, but at the same time, you can't blame him because of the Steelers' pass rush, and he goes to try and look off the linebacker Spillane, and he stares Willie Snead down. he just didn't wait quite long enough, but he ends up getting hit by TJ Watt anyway, so it would have been 50-50 there if he was able to get it off. But, you know, Spillane just kind of sat still because Lamar went through the progression so quickly and tried to fire it to Prochet. He assumed that because his eyes were on Snead that he would move the linebacker and just got it off. And it was third down. It was early on. And he wanted to make a play. But then the next drive, I love the fact that the Ravens came firing out, throwing the ball, a nice like 14-yard gain to Miles Boykins on a skinny post there. And Lamar fits the ball into a tight window and has a very confident throw from the pocket. So the Ravens came back out firing, end up going down the field, get aided by a penalty there. And, you know, it was a penalty, so there's no debate on that one. It was certainly a late hit, but they end up scoring and able to get their stuff back together. But again, it was just like Lamar is going too quickly through some of these reads and kind of premeditating, like, all right, pre-snap, this is what's going to happen. And it's not just that he's staring a receiver down or something like that. So it's not, you know, just a basic level error. But then you see a second interception where he kind of floats the ball, and it was just predetermined that that was where the ball was going to go. And, you know, you hear Alex Highsmith say that the Ravens ran something similar earlier in the game, and he just kind of got the same vibe from the way they were lined up and how the play started. So he thought to himself, all right, I'll just, you know, get a little deeper this time. And Lamar floated the ball there. It really reminds you of the interception before the half thrown, you know, towards Seth Roberts in Pittsburgh right before the half in 2019, where there's two receivers in the same area. But other than that, I mean, it was an up and down game, and you saw him bounce back several times. After the pick six, Ravens go down and score a touchdown. Late in the game, the Ravens needed a touchdown, a go-ahead touchdown. Lamar drives him down the field, gets it done, scores three touchdowns in a row almost, has a scramble that's negated by a hold. Ends up floating one to Hollywood Brown that was, you know, a microscopic molecule away from being a touchdown, and then ends up able to find Hollywood again and put an exclamation point there. And then, you know, the Steelers come back and aided by a couple Ravens penalties, able to drive down the field again and score another touchdown. So it was an up and down game. You know, the Ravens were able to march down again, get to the 4th-and-3. Are they a yard short? And everybody wants to say four turnovers. Well, that one was like a turnover on downs, and he reached out, and the ball comes out. So it's not like it was, you know, some huge penalty or anything, but or huge turnover, pardon me. And then the Ravens drive down again at the very end of the game to try and win the game, and they just come up a little bit short. And obviously, you know, there's some question, and had some officials and former officials speak to the fact that there should have been more time on the clock, but Ravens can't control that. So what they can control is not turning the football over, and you know, trying to maintain those highs and stop panicking, rushing a little bit too much and cut some of those lows out. And the fact that Lamar Jackson is not a turnover prone quarterback, he hasn't thrown a ton of interceptions, but these two teams, they just build their rosters and they go about their business in the off season and they plan to play each other. You know, if you want to win the AFC North, if you're the Steelers, you got to make sure you're beating the Ravens, especially more often than not, and vice versa for the Ravens. So up and down in this game, Lamar did some things on the ground. He made some good decisions. He has an amazing throw where he manipulated coverage and got Minkah Fitzpatrick to roll and then floats one to Devin Duvernay downfield. And Duvernay certainly could have just run under that one and maybe walks in for a touchdown there. But, you know, you give him credit for making the catch still. But it was an up and down game. It was a bloodbath. It was a battle. It was a sloppy game. And, you know, the Ravens couldn't quite get it done. But it's just one of those games where you want to have a takeaway from it and you want to, you know, have this big statement about what it leaves the Ravens at or where they are, etc. And I mean, let's say Willie Snead somehow catches that ball in the last play of the game. Does that change anything? Does that change the way the game went? Does that change the errors that made? Or does it just kind of put a little smile on your face because you walked away that Sunday with a W? It's November. It's not, you know, the end all be all. The Ravens don't control their own destinies per se, but you know, they're in a good spot still. They're still 5-1. The big takeaway is that Ronnie Stanley's out for the year. That's awful and all that stuff. But the Ravens are still in good shape. So they take their licks and take their wounds. And a lot of people want to go and say, you know, oh, well, what's the big difference? Why were they so much better last year? When you look back on 2019, 7 games, Ravens are 5-2. This year, 7 games, Ravens are 5-2. Lamar's worst game happens in Kansas City and against the Steelers. 2020, Lamar's worst game happens against Kansas City and against the Steelers. I mean, It kind of feels like deja vu in a way. A lot of things feel similar and just kind of the streakiness of the offense and things like that. But you can't just say that's how the rest of the season is going to go. But it's also no reason to be discouraged from a team that's 5-2 and the two teams they've lost to are, you know, sitting at the 1-2 seed in the AFC. So a lot of football left, a lot of big games, and also a lot of cupcake games. So a lot of football left, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to be excited for, and I totally agree with, you know, even if the Ravens do walk out of M&T Bank Stadium on Sunday with a W against the Steelers, there are still those issues that persist, and there are also still those good things that come out of the game that do persist. But Spencer, I want to talk a bit with you before we head into our first break about the Ravens' rushing attack, because even minus Mark Ingram, you know, somebody who has gotten a little flack this year for not being as productive, the Ravens' rushing offense was phenomenal against Pittsburgh. 47 carries, 265 yards. That's 5.6 yards per carry right there. J.K. Dobbins, 15 for 113. Gus Edwards, 16 for 87. Lamar Jackson, 16 for 65. What did you see out of this running game? What did you take away from that game from the rushing attack against Pittsburgh?
The J.K. Dobbins makes people miss. He gets yards after contact. He's explosive in the open field. He is a dynamic runner. He is a better threat to break off long runs, have explosive runs consistently, move the chains, make big plays, and kind of demoralize defenses than any running back the Ravens have had in quite some time. Going all the way back to Ray Rice, yeah, you'd have to say. So J.K. Dobbins is the real deal, and I think he's ready. You'd like to see him get a little more involved in the passing game. That is going to come eventually. Gus Edwards, of course, does what he does. He gets downhill. And he is now, you know, kind of gashed the Steelers twice in a row. Lamar was able to break contain a couple times, make some nice runs, and some of them weren't, you know. He didn't have, like, a signature gigantic run other than the one that was called back on holding, but still made things happen, moved the chains, took what was given to him, able to scramble a few times and do some different things and make the Steelers respect the threat of his legs. You saw him really try and brave contact a couple times, which you don't love to see, but you know that kind of makes you realize that he hasn't been doing that in other games and kind of shows how badly they did want this one. So, you know, they're going to step it up a notch and be able to do some things. Of course, the offensive line going down, Stanley Phillips goes out, McCarrie comes in facing a, you know, essentially an all-pro defensive line from the Steelers where, you know, they have four or five guys that could end up as first or second team all-pros, and all five of them could certainly be Pro Bowlers and probably should, but they're able to do a lot of damage to other teams, but the Ravens were able to completely and utterly gash them. And they did the same thing even without Lamar in week 17 last year. So it's good to know that the Ravens have the Steelers number in the run game a little bit. And, you know, they were willing to run the ball down their throats, and they did. The passing game just wasn't consistent enough. They couldn't consistently, you know, move the ball down the field when they needed to through the passing game. And, you know, you can scream, run the ball, don't throw the ball until you're red in the face. But if you didn't learn after last year that you have to be able to throw the ball to win, then I don't know what to tell you at this point.
Yeah, certainly. You know, the run game opens up the pass game opens up the run game. It all goes hand in hand. And that's something that I've been, you know, trying to drive home over the last few weeks because it's so true. And I think once Baltimore's passing game does get going, you know, this offense truly, literally could be unstoppable. But we're going to head into our first break here, and when we get back, we'll be talking about the defensive side of the ball in that 28-24 loss to Pittsburgh. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. Bilko makes you the best you at whatever you do, whether it's a mental or physical wall. Break through it with Go every day. Put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Bilko is the best workout gel on the market. So go to BiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off of your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BiltGo.com. Let's go. We are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, looking at the defensive performance for Baltimore, the defense was put in some bad spots throughout this game. Obviously, the pick six, those 7 points, I'm not going to credit to them. Then you kind of mentioned you went into detail about Lamar Jackson's second half interception after the defense actually forced a three and out for Pittsburgh on their first possession of the second half because Pittsburgh won the toss and decided to defer. So the Baltimore's defense was riding high off of the momentum of, you know, having a shutout first half, or not, you know, a shutout first half, but a good first half. And then they get the three and out, and then Alex Highsmith just makes a great read, picks off that football. And now Pittsburgh has a short field. They score a touchdown. And, you know, there were a few times throughout the second half where the defense was driven on. The Pittsburgh Steelers drove down the field on offense. And so I want to first talk to you, Spencer, about what you saw from the Pittsburgh offense and why Baltimore's defense kind of had a drop-off in performance from the first half to the second half.
Yeah, I mean, it was really one big factor for me, and it was the no huddle from the Steelers. and Terrell Bonds being out there, someone that the Steelers felt like they could pick on a little bit, and they did. Makes sense. He doesn't have a ton of experience, and I'd rather throw it than the other, you know, three corners that the Ravens trot out there. It negates the pass rush, and I came on the show and on my own show as well. I said that if the Steelers are able to get the ball out quickly, they're probably going to win this game because it really neutralizes the pass rush. So, you know, there's not a ton to say other than that for me. There aren't huge takeaways when the Steelers tried to run and execute and huddle and do that. The Ravens punched them in the mouth. That's what we saw the Patriots do to the Ravens last year in Baltimore, where the Ravens were punching them in the mouth and the Patriots like, all right, we got to speed it up because it'll take the edge off of this pass rush and some of those things. So really for the Ravens moving forward, it's just communicating, getting better in those no huddle situations and to have their assignments down pat and trying to throw a little sauce on when they can. That's a good experience for the Ravens defense to go through, but they made a ton of plays. They made a ton of big stops, had some three and outs. Deshaun Elliott with a huge sack and Ngakoue gets the pressure, which is great to see. I thought that Jalen Ferguson, Pernell McPhee, and those guys did great. And, you know, they end up having a humongous stop at the end of the game to get the ball back. And they almost won the game for the Ravens, allowing the offense to go down. And unfortunately, the Ravens couldn't punch it in and didn't quite get that time put back on the clock you might like to see them have. But in the end, it was a great day for the defense overall. They did allow the Steelers to go down and score twice, but the Steelers score a lot of points. They have a good passing attack and a well-balanced offense. So there's some good takeaways in this game as well as some learning points. And I think that defending the no huddle is going to be imperative moving forward when they play better teams and better quarterbacks that are able to do so competently.
Yeah, definitely. And you kind of mentioned how the pass rush was almost negated in the second half because of the quick hitting offense that Pittsburgh has. And I wanted to talk to you, Spencer, about what you saw out of the pass rush in this game. Now, Baltimore was able to sack Ben Roethlisberger twice. You know, he only lost 9 yards on those sacks. But obviously with new addition Yannick Ngakoue in there and obviously the loss of Matthew Judon in the middle of the second quarter for inadvertently hitting an official, but, you know, if you hit an official, you're out 10 times out of 10. What did you see from the Ravens pass rush and how big of an effect was not having Matthew Judon in there for Baltimore?
It was definitely a big deal to have Judon go out. It ends up forcing Ngakoue, a guy who doesn't, you know, have everything down pat yet to play a lot. But the good news is that Jalen Ferguson stepped the hell up. He had a great game. He's played a really good month of football over the last 4 games, I think. And he looks like a strong piece moving forward that'll be able to give the Ravens someone in 2021 that they can count on. And he looks like a player that they are able to end up counting on moving forward. And that was a really big takeaway. You see Ngakoue end up playing 65% of snaps, and that's a big deal. So it's going to be imperative moving forward that those guys stay fresh. And if someone goes down, they have to be able to step up. Thought Calais Campbell, you know, had an up and down game, able to clock some passing lanes, make life difficult. But when the ball comes out quickly, if he can't bat a pass, he's going to get negated a lot of the time. Overall, the front seven was, you know, up and down. LJ Fort ends up kind of blowing a coverage a little bit there on following the second interception that allows Eric Ebron to walk into the end zone. It happens. They were rattled. They had to go on the field. Steelers had a plan. So it was definitely good to see those guys step up, but very encouraged by what I saw from Tyus Bowser in coverage as well as Jalen Ferguson overall. He looks like a professional starting caliber outside linebacker at this point.
Yeah, for Baltimore, they have a good pass rush. And obviously, once Pittsburgh started to go out there, fire those quick-hitting passes out, it does negate the pass rush and how effective that is because you literally just cannot get there fast enough. And Judon's exit from this game, I think, was very big for this Ravens team. But Spencer, I think we're going to end this segment off here. We have to talk about the penalties. The Ravens have been under a sea of yellow hankies over the last few weeks here. Overall, over the last 2 games for Baltimore, they have had 21 accepted penalties against them. Over 200 yards, 242 to be exact. So Spencer, in this game against Pittsburgh, did you see this game as, you know, bad penalties called on Baltimore? Were the penalties justifiable? And how does Baltimore fix it moving forward?
The Ravens, you know, had some penalties occur in the no huddle when the Steelers were pressing. You end up seeing the pass interference, which I haven't gotten a chance to rewatch yet. And I know the broadcast did not show that, which was interesting. The face mask there, a couple others as well. So definitely not some ideal situations coming out of that. You see the skirmish between Deontay Johnson and Marcus Peters and a couple other ones. I mean, Steelers got walked down the field with the face mask and then the pass interference. It was like 35 yards of penalties on that drive that ends up being paramount and putting them in a position where Chase Claypool ends up reeling in a touchdown and the Ravens are kind of backpedaling there. But overall, you know, defensive penalties, don't have a huge correlation to losing games. That is something that has been tested over time, and Football Outsiders wrote a really beautiful article that they also mentioned. If you go to their kind of their commendments listed in their info at footballoutsiders.com, they get into eloquently stating essentially that offense to penalties have a much stronger correlation to losing football games and negating points than defensive penalties do. And that's why it was so hurtful for the Ravens to continuously have those, you know, illegal formations and setting themselves back there, but more so on the defense on this particular Sunday. And not a ton of good takeaways that way. Over the last 2 weeks, it's 21 penalties for, you know, 260 yards, while the Ravens opponents have had 6 penalties caught on them. So it's just a little interesting that after the bye week, the Ravens aren't able to get it together in the penalty department, continuously getting those penalties over and over and over again. And I just can't see how two teams that they play against only accumulate 6 penalties. So I know that John Harbaugh is really voicing frustrations with some different things and games kind of not being called. But at the same time, he sums it up best. You can't do anything about what the referees call. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. You can only control what you can control. And that's a coaching-ism always. But it remains true. And, you know, that's why they say the cliches are true. So at the end of the day, you got to get better and execute. I think on offense, a huge part of eliminating some of those mistakes is just get to the damn line faster. It's taking too long to get to the line. Part of that's on Lamar. Part of that seems to be on Roman not getting the plays in quickly enough, as we can kind of see when the play comes in. Lamar looks to his wristband and gets it going. Sometimes those are those last second adjustments that we've seen. Miles Boykin kind of have some disconnect, although he did have a huge game this past week. So it's just getting to the line, getting prepared, having those things happen. And offensively, I've mentioned it on this show and many others that they're young offense. They're young, they're inexperienced, they're cheap. A lot of, you know, rookie contract guys, and they're going to make mistakes. That's what happens. That's why teams pay veterans and pay guys who don't make those mistakes. So it's to be expected, but at the same time, it also has to be grown upon.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, if you don't want the penalties to directly affect, you know, the outcome of the game, whether it's a win, whether it's a loss, you know, you should be in a position to win the game without having those penalties be a huge, huge factor and ultimately decide the course and the outcome of the game, which in this case, you could say turnovers, the penalties, they played a massive part in the outcome of this game. And for Baltimore, hopefully, you mentioned it moving forward, they'll be able to grow from this and grow from these penalties and understand, hey, I can't do this, or I can get away with this, but not really with this. So there's a lot to be learned upon from this week. And so I'm still, despite the loss, very encouraged about where this Baltimore team can go. But we're going to head into our final break here. And when we get back, we'll be talking about the Ravens' positive coronavirus test, how that affects the team. We'll talk about Ronnie Stanley's loss and more. So stay tuned for that, and we will be back soon. We return here with our final segment of this Locked On Ravens episode here on Tuesday. Kevin Allshaker still talking here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, again, a rough 24, 36 hours here for Baltimore, you know, Sunday leading into Monday. And the bad Monday news, the big news for this Baltimore Ravens team, was the fact that Marlon Humphrey has tested positive for the coronavirus. And if this positive is not a false one, that's big, because Marlon Humphrey will not be able to play against the Colts. They'll have to go back and look at the, you know, close contacts, the contact tracing type protocols. Baltimore already is in the intensive NFL protocol. Now, Humphrey was sick. He did miss practice last week on Wednesday with an illness, but tested negative all the way up until game day, and it was ultimately the test that was conducted on game day that came back positive yesterday. So, Spencer, how does this affect the Ravens going into Sunday's matchup with the Colts, assuming it is played? And are you confident with the players who are on the roster right now for Baltimore in the cornerback department in what is now a very thin secondary?
Well, it's impossible to say you're confident in the secondary that is down Tavon Young, Anthony Averett, and Marlon Humphrey at this point. Terrell Bond's coming in, Khalil Dorsey as well. It's razor thin. It's very thin. They are going to have to make some sort of move, whether it's bringing in a free agent or promoting someone else from the practice squad or potentially trading. If there's a position that needs to be traded for, my vote's for cornerback at this point. It seems that the cornerback gods have voted against them. And we've seen how that played out before with teams that were, you know, playoff caliber, Super Bowl, maybe caliber teams that ended up being too thin at cornerback. And that is really one of the killers. If you can't go cover the other team in those no huddle situations, late in January and in December and February and all those good times, you're not going to go far. So the Ravens need to make sure they can shore that up. While it's good that Marlon Humphrey is, you know, not injured, it is terrible to hear that he has COVID. He did have symptoms, so you hope that doesn't end up lingering with him, because it can linger with some people. So it's not good news. You know, I'm confident in the Ravens to win any of their remaining matchups at this point if they're able to get Humphrey back still, but I would like to see them get additional depth. And it's going to make things tough against the Colts if the Ravens can't get pressure against a pretty good Colts offensive line, and Phillip Rivers is able to get the ball out quickly. Another veteran who has, you know, had some pretty storied matchups against the Ravens, similar to Ben Roethlisberger, but not quite to the same extent, then it's going to be an interesting matchup, and it's a tough game. It's a game that I predicted the Ravens to lose before this season, where I think the Colts aren't quite as good. And if you look at their ELO, it's, you know, the worst in the NFL. Their estimated opponents are not terribly powerful. So it might be some good news there. We did see the Browns roll through there and have some troubles against some lesser teams. So it's going to be an interesting matchup and another tough one, probably one of the toughest ones remaining for the Ravens, especially without Marlon Humphrey, if he does end up, in fact, being out for that game. So hopefully the Ravens are able to figure it out, and the offense can get it together to an extent. The Colts have given up a good bit of points lately, but do have a very strong overall defense, and it's going to be an interesting matchup.
Yeah, absolutely. The Colts are a team that I think a lot of people don't give them the respect they do deserve. They have a very good roster, and people look and they say, oh, Phillip Rivers is old and he can't play quarterback. Well, the Colts have played very good football, and you mentioned their defense. I think people look at the Colts' defense and they don't see it as a great unit, but the truth of the matter is they're a top 10 defense, if not top 5 in this league right now, and they are playing phenomenal football. That defense led by Darius Leonard. You know, this will be a tough game for Baltimore, and now down Marlon Humphrey, down Ronnie Stanley for the rest of the season. Baltimore hopefully will have a bounce back game here, but you know, the Colts, again, they could give the Ravens a run for their money. But finally here, Spencer, kind of ending the podcast on a down note, unfortunately, but we do have to talk about Ronnie Stanley. I feel like just the absolute massive loss that he is. Stanley, you know, the big news was he got rolled up on by TJ Watt on a Lamar Jackson sack. Broke his ankle, dislocated it, tore some ligaments, it looks like. A brutal injury, but luckily he was able to secure his money. And I back that deal. I support that deal. It was a smart deal by the Ravens. Injuries happen in this game of football, you know, at any point. And it's a physical game. The Ravens-Steelers rivalry is a physical game. But looking at the long-term implications for this, Spencer, for the rest of the season, the offensive line was struggling to an extent without or with Ronnie Stanley in the lineup. Now with Stanley gone, they're going to have to move Orlando Brown to the left side. They're going to move DJ Fluker to the right. And right now at this very moment, they don't have a backup tackle on the active roster or on the practice squad. So moving forward, Spencer, how do you feel about this offensive line?
It's tough to feel good, especially considering Marshall Yanda's departure in the last year as well. So it's, you know, two all-pro, top of the game, top blockers for your young quarterback, and it's just really unfortunate considering Ronnie Stanley's extension for the immediate future. It stinks. For the long-term future, you hope that he's able to make a full recovery and, you know, things go well, because, you know, a big man on a bad foot or a bad ankle can be a huge problem. A lot of careers get derailed from, you know, those lower extremity injuries among linemen, and it's tough. It's a tough scene. Hopefully he's able to come back and, you know, stay durable, stay in the lineup and things like that. But once those start, sometimes they kind of snowball. I don't want to say that or speculate that, and I'll knock on some wood here for him, but you got to wish the big fellow the best of luck. And it's really unfortunate just considering how great of a week it was and against a huge opponent and all that good stuff. You got to feel for Ronnie Stanley, who's been nothing short of a great Raven so far, and to the point where the Ravens were willing to give him a $100 million investment. So it's just mightily unfortunate. Moving forward, you know, Orlando Brown at left tackle, see what he's worth there. That is a big, big deal for him, as he can really kind of increase his value by proving that he can play left tackle and do it at a high level. But DJ Fluker is a significant drop off from Orlando Brown, and Orlando Brown is probably going to have at least a pretty decent drop off from Ronnie Stanley, who is arguably the best left tackle in football before that injury. So it's pretty glum on the offensive line, but it's football. It happens. Guys get hurt every single week. You know, how many guys have we seen go down this season? It's quite unfortunate, but it's the nature of the sport. It's a violent sport. And, it's just an unfortunate injury he got rolled up on. Happens all the time, and it's beyond their control. So as Harbaugh said, control the controllables, you know, control what you can control. And right now it's doing something. It puts the Ravens in a really weird spot. Is it worth it to trade another pick for another player without Ronnie Stanley? You're not going to get Ronnie Stanley's level of production. It would take 2 first-round picks to do so. You know, their tackles aren't really available. Ones that can play and start are not readily available. It take a mightily lucky phone call from Eric DaCosta to find someone to be able to replace him. But it just kind of begs the question of, is it worth it now without Ronnie Stanley to continue to kind of go all in? I don't think that the Ngakoue move was just an immediate impact move, a rental. It feels like they have some greater things in mind, but at this point, it's just a really weird time right before the trade deadline. So the Ravens are going to have to go and try and figure out what they can do. And I don't know what to predict. I can only speculate, but it puts them in kind of this weird paradoxical purgatory where, I mean, you can go all in, but then it spreads you so thin in draft capital if you want to make another move for an offensive lineman or something. And at the same time, if you don't, it kind of limits what you can do this season, it feels like. So I think that transitioning the scheme, if they don't find someone, or even if they do, to more of a zone scheme will help, more of a zone blocking scheme, using guys like Boyle and Ricard to help fill in more max protect, more six-man protections, all that good stuff. But it's really hard because teams stack the Ravens underneath. They get single high, which means that there's a lot of defenders underneath. It's hard to dump the ball underneath and get those quick passes off to negate pass rush. So it's going to have to do some tampering and tinkering from Greg Roman and Lamar Jackson to try and hide that. But at this point, you know, it feels like they're already trying to mask their right guard situation. So as Brian Baldinger always says, you can hide one offensive lineman, but hiding 700 pounds a man is not an easy task when it's two. So it's going to be a tall task for the Ravens, but let's see if they're up to it.
Yeah, this loss is a big one for Baltimore. You know, there's no understating it. Stanley, an all-pro talent. You mentioned Marshall Yanda's loss as well. The offensive line is an interesting unit right now, and it seems like, you know, their strength is more in the run game, which works because Baltimore, you know, they have a very, very talented ground game. But it's in the pass game. It's the pass protection. It's giving Lamar Jackson time to throw the football. That's where I think the offensive line has to shore up just a tiny bit more. You know, Bradley Bozeman's been playing great football, but you have that revolving door at right guard. You know, Patrick McCurry most likely is going to draw the start this week if Tyree Phillips isn't able to go with what I think is being classified as a high ankle sprain. Matt Skura has not looked the part so far this season, to be honest. And, you know, I'd even consider a center change, although I think that's probably a little too drastic. But for the most part, this offensive line has some kinks to work out now because they're down. They're top two linemen from 2019. And, you know, the guy who's been starting at right guard for Baltimore for most of 2020. So the unit right now, it's a mess, but hopefully they'll be able to figure things out. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thanks so much for joining the show here. And hopefully when we get back next week, Baltimore are able to have a bounce back in the win column and beat those Colts.
Yeah, it's going to be a tall task. As I said, I had the Ravens going 12-4 this season, and three of the losses are Chiefs, Colts, and the first Steelers matchup. So hopefully I am wrong, but it's going to be a tough one without Marlon Humphrey, without Ronnie Stanley. But I think this defense is up to the task to make it a very close game at the least. So it'll be interesting. Thank you so much for having me on, Kevin. I appreciate it. Make sure to give Kevin 5 stars in those iTunes review charts. Gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. So reward the man. And thanks again, Kevin. I'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks so much, Spencer. Yeah, next man up mentality. But that's all that we have for you here today. When we get back tomorrow, more Ravens talk from us, talking with Cole and answering your mailbag questions. So stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.